Okay, raise your hand if you guys have seen My Unorthodox Life, which just dropped as a series last, I believe, Wednesday. So it's only like it's less than a week. Okay,
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about Unorthodox.
My Unorthodox Life. I'm sorry, My Unorthodox Life. Correct.
Is that new? Not the one with Shira Haas?
with Julie, with Julie
No,
Hart,
not with Shira Haas. No.
Julia Hart. So that's unorthodox. That's
I didn't even know what came out till Riley Wilde sent that message today.
It's okay. It's only been on Netflix for 6 days. So you know, and
Been
Arby
reading
number.
all the hot takes on it, like everyone on Facebook is posting their reactions to it. I haven't seen it because last Wednesday night I was having a baby, or 2 Wednesday nights ago I was having a baby, so I haven't actually seen
Awesome
it.
talk to you. That's a
Thank you. I
just added it to my queue. It's a reality show.
Yeah, I watched
Really?
it all.
All right, so I'm gonna so we're gonna we're gonna since I knew that not everybody has been up on the show, what we're gonna do is I'm gonna, of course, show sort of like a 5 minute clip, which gets into part of it really where Julia talks about her coming from what she describes as a yeshivish background, and then leaving it. Okay, and we're gonna there's a lot to talk about. I'm not sure in our time together we can get to everything, but I want to at least address some of the chief issues. So without further ado,
Is this tied into the parsha, or is this a whole separate class? Like
no,
you
it's also
said,
and of course, Sean, I am tying it to the parsha.
right.
Of course.
All right.
This is still the parsha class, but through the prism of Netflix reality show My Unorthodox Life. And the title of the class is simply Netflix, My Unorthodox Life, Attack or Wake-Up Call. So we're going to get into it.
Pretty much every major model, Naomi Campbell, Cindy Crawford, you name them, has come through elite world.
Oh, love of my life.
I'm married to an amazing man. I have four incredible children. Three of them live here in Manhattan, and my little one, Aaron, we share custody, my ex-husband and I. Hey guys, I know I have oysters on the table. There's also kosher things coming.
Next time we have bacon.
Let's do one step at a time.
Oh my God.
It's really hard to imagine that just a few years ago, I was living in an extreme ultra-Orthodox Jewish community called Yeshivisha Hainisha for my entire life until the time I was 40. There are a lot of Jews who live perfectly regular lives. It has nothing to do with Judaism or religion. This has to do with fundamentalism. I love being Jewish, but I do believe whether it's Jewish fundamentalism, Muslim fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism, it is so dangerous. The women in our community are second-class citizens. We only exist in relation to a man. A woman can't sing because a man might get attracted to her. You can ride a bicycle because your knees might show and some man might have bad thoughts about you. The women in our community recovered. It's your mother's responsibility to teach you modesty. Your entire purpose is not to attract attention. Think about where we came from that we're sitting at this table. Do you remember when I first take off my wig, how like angry at me you were? Yeah. If any of your body parts were uncovered, there's a very special form of hell that is reserved for both you and your mother. In this hell, your mother would dip your clothes in acid, put them on your body, and so throughout the day, your body would decompose from the acid. And then the next morning, it would start all over again for thousands of years, or however many years hell lasts. When you learn this as a child, and everyone around you believes it, you believe it.
I remember in school, I was taught that men are better than women.
Yeah.
Guys are just better than girls. That's just how it is, you know? And I think that mindset's a little crazy.
Well, we said it every morning from the time you're a baby. What do you say?
Thank you, God, for not making me a woman.
Thank you very much. In our community, a woman basically has one purpose, to follow her husband and to be a baby-making machine. A man can divorce a wife for burning his food, but a woman, even if she's being beaten, cannot divorce her husband. Marriage was prison. I hated being married, but I have no education. I have no way to support myself. How do I leave? So I thought, okay, what is the one thing you can do without a degree? You can sell. It took me many years, but I started to sell life insurance and annuities without my husband knowing about it.
I slowly, slowly started building my little escape fund, and I just packed up and left. No plan, wasn't organized. I just couldn't sit there for another millisecond.
Yeah, Ben and I have been married almost 8 years.
Well, I walked out like 2 months after you guys got married.
2 days.
2 days.
We got married on a Wednesday. And then we took Thursday. Off like 10 days later, Sunday.
And then you took off. So when I left, Batsheva was already married. She was living in Israel. Shlomo was away in yeshiva. So there was only Miriam and Aaron at home. Miriam came and moved in with me. And Aaron, he was really little. He was 7 years old. And so half the time he's with me and half the time he's still in Muncie.
I'm very lucky to have been married to be married to Batsheva. We're very much on the same level religiously. And what we've learned is that very much on a lot of things we are. And a very big thing, and you'll see when you're in a relationship one day, is that communication is basically arguably the most important thing.
Batsheva is my oldest daughter. She had been brought up in that world the longest. So, of course, for her, it was extremely difficult.
Ben and I are at a different level than you, and I think that's okay. Ben is my husband and best friend. He is a real estate agent in the city. We got married when we were 19 years old. Getting married that young is very common. Right after I got married, my mom decided she no longer wanted to be religious at all. And that was really challenging for me because I was brought up one way, and she was basically saying, I don't believe in any of that. I'm going. I still live a very religious Jewish lifestyle, but I am obviously not where I used to be, and I've found my own way in the religion.
I was definitely taught one way or the highway.
Yeah, one way or the highway.
You know,
that's it.
But I think that's a little crazy, the least.
My daughter, Miriam, is very much like me in the sense that we're both not religious at all.
Somebody asked, like, what a lesbian was, and my teacher said that that doesn't even exist. That means I'm not breaking any rules. Growing up in my community, I really, really had a hard time. All I wanted to do was run around and play sports, and I couldn't as a woman. I was around constant sexism. I wasn't able to explore my sexuality at all. So my mom took me out of the community when I was 13. So I'm very much in debt to her and grateful for everything she's done for me.
Let's toast. Julia's been doing so much. I'm in awe of you, my love.
All right. All right. All right. So you guys, so that's by the way, I'm sharing you pretty much the first 5-6 minutes of episode one of the whole show. So
it only gets worse.
Okay. So there's a lot to talk about here.
How do I sign out from this religion?
Why say it again?
How do I sign out? Is there a...
Exactly. So obviously, shall we say, not a positive feeling here. Just to summarize, here's this woman, currently named Julia Hart, before called Talia, and she basically grew up in a yeshivish environment. What we call a black hat environment. Now, if you go on to Jew in the City, who's been writing, regularly, you can see much more information. And basically, her friend saying that she didn't really grow up in there, she didn't live in such a Haredi, yeshivish environment. But all right, but leaving the details alone, because I'm not interested in addressing, her situation in a certain sense. And I think Alan posted on our fellowship chat, I feel sad for her because in one of her interviews, she talked about that she was feeling suicidal. Now, the reality is that this is a very important point. Point number one of the night, Judaism is not a hospital. And if you have psychological issues, being in Judaism or not in Judaism is not really the issue. If a person feels, she felt stuck. And she says it's not about Judaism, about fundamentalism. We'll talk about that shortly. But, there are psychological issues here as well. So that's an important. And obviously, Judaism works when a person's happy. If you're fundamentally miserable as a person, you're not good. You're having a hard time being a human being, much less a good Jew. So there's much to talk about of Judaism and mental health. That's a topic in its own right. But of course, her situation speaks of it. And we're all familiar with, you know, with people who have, for whatever reason, have left, you know, Orthodoxy for a whole wide variety of reasons. And obviously, many people on this call are uniquely familiar, people who have, who grew up secular and joined observant Judaism, Orthodox Judaism. So it's everybody's familiar with the phenomena that there is an indoor and there's an outdoor. So tonight, we want to explore, you know, some of these issues, because the truth is we have to accept one fact, that the fact is that Netflix has realized there's an algorithm out there. And that algorithm is that Jewish people stuck in either in Hasidic communities or yeshiva communities, and the only way they can have personal redemption is escape from essentially a cult, which is the way that the information is being presented here. And I want to talk about some of the issues that she brought up. Obviously, we can't, you know, they squeezed a lot in 5 minutes. I can't address everything. Obviously, we can, you know, we'll have ongoing conversations about this. But I just want to focus on, which is a major motif, both in the series. I didn't watch all episodes. I did a little, you know, skipping and saw some of the various parts. But one of the issue is a major motif is that Julia Hart identifies that she is, you know, she feels that women in Judaism are discriminated against. And that's one of the reasons that she had to leave. What were some of the three areas that she mentioned that she felt discriminated against or perceived that she was discriminated against?
Well, one of the morning blessings when a man says, basically thanking Hashem for not making him a woman.
Baruch atah Hashem mechalam shelo asani isha. Blessed you God who's not made me a woman. Okay, number one. Okay, what else? But that's where it's sort of like an evidence of, not really what that's. That's what's the basic.
She couldn't have a job.
Was to have kids and to be married.
Yes, the goal of a woman is to be married and have children, and as Scott pointed out, and fundamentally not be, not pursue your career or career dream. Okay, now, first of all, actually, even in the most let's just deal with the facts for a moment. We're speaking, we're largely part of the modern Orthodox community. It's not really something that that's really an issue in the modern Orthodox community, because every child, man and woman, who graduates from a modern Orthodox school, and even Jewish school, will get an education and will go to college by and large, and will get a career. But she felt, her perception, and again, what I'm doing, which is appropriate when you're one person coming with a complaint, I'm taking the following as a given. Their feelings are their feelings. Their pain is their pain. And that's a given. And I'm not disputing that. And that's it. But factually, we know that many people who grew up in the yeshivish world, women work outside the home all the time. Maybe they don't even necessarily want to, but in America, 80% of women work outside of the home in a certain, not because they necessarily want to, because financially they need to. It's hard for a couple to financially support itself on one income alone. So very, just factually, that's just a challenge. But her critique is far broader than that. Just to summarize, she feels that women in Judaism are, number one, second-class citizens. Their mission is get married, have babies, and to essentially serve men. That's her fundamental criticism. Is that, would you say that captures her essential point there?
Mm-hmm. And okay. Not to men.
She also mentioned about the fashion issue that, you know, you're very restricted on what you can wear, particularly as a woman, what is appropriate.
Right. One of her ongoing mantras, and she's been on a, you know, as when you have a, new series, you got to go on the circuit, and she's, you know, doing interviews, New York Times, etc. And, you know, her way that she's framing the criticism is, it's not about Judaism. I love Judaism. Rather, I'm against fundamentalism, and I don't want to have any guy should tell me what to do. Okay. No man should tell me what to do. Okay, so we're going to get into that. I just want to make sure that we're her fundamental. We're going to address some of her critiques. Now, I guess the question I want to ask you all is: Julia's critique really about Judaism, or is it better thought of as a critique of a certain community's approach to the treatment of women? Who would like to weigh in on that?
Definitely the latter. I think certain communities see it differently. I also think, even not to necessarily criticize the modern Orthodox community, but I've seen it just that, like, getting married does feel like it's the most important thing.
Right.
But I think that that's more an issue with the community than with, like, Jewish law.
Okay, so that's an excellent point. All right, Alan, want to weigh in?
I'll also say, like, so I did watch everything, and her sister is also Orthodox, modern Orthodox, and is very comfortable, and I think actually portrayed being Orthodox in a great light in contrast to Julia, where Julia was trying to get her to wear pants, and she goes, no, she wore pants once. She goes, I'm comfortable in a skirt, you know, like, I'm comfortable wearing my shadel. Right. You know, so it wasn't like it was oppression, like Julia said. That interaction between her and her sister just kind of adds to that point that it was more personal than it was actually modern Orthodox or Orthodoxy.
Right. I mean, I think it's a very important point, in other words, that I don't want to, but it's interesting. She knew about modern Orthodoxy, but she did not, but it's very important to say that she did not elect to, she didn't say, I live in Muncie, in this part of Muncie, and now I'm going to go to the other part of Muncie, which is more modern Orthodox. She didn't like, and then, by the way, that happens all the time, by the way, you should know. You know, there is no, I'm going to state another point. Point number two of the night. No, there is not one Judaism. There are many denominations, you're aware of that. And within there, and even within Orthodoxy, there are many different communities. And with every different communities, there are different families. So you're not going to have this, you know, one size fits all vision of anything. It's life is far more, you know, far more complex and nuanced than that. So that's an important point. But it is important to note that she didn't elect, if she found that issue, if that brand too, you know, too oppressive. Now, again, the Haredi world has reasons. In other words, there was also never, you know, what, you know, do they have a reason for, shall we say, being very strict about the sneeze laws toward women? Maybe they have reasons. In fact, you know, so far as they're dealing with modernity, it's not about, it's really they're addressing to how they're responding to the Western world. I'm just saying that it's not just, is it about male oppression of women, or is it more of an issue of their response, their best way of them navigating modernity? So that's another something to think about. But I really want to get to the key question of the night. This is, I want to hear feedback from you all. Is Julia completely wrong? I'm getting a shaking of the hand from Marissa. Go ahead, explain. Unmute yourself so we can all hear you.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I don't agree with this idea of sort of sensationalizing Orthodox Jewish culture and putting it on Netflix for the world to see. At the same time, I've seen some of the unfortunate truths behind some of the things that she's describing. It certainly is not across the board. It's absolutely not. There are some cultural norms in the Haredi community that that unfortunately really have absolutely nothing to do with Judaism. It's not about Judaism, but there are some cultural norms that are sometimes a response to modernity, and, you know, other times there's just sort of, I can't explain why they believe what they believe or why they do what they do. But I think she's not totally wrong, because everything she said, like, I've heard it, I've seen it. I wouldn't say it's normative, but
okay, so unfortunately, I mean, well, right, and certainly, and would you say that her view reflects? Would you say that her view reflects sort of how the world in general looks at Orthodox Jews?
Maybe. I mean, for people who don't know, you know, if you look from the outside and you see, you know, a woman wearing skirts and covering her hair, and, you know, in the, you know, for example, in New Square, like, women are not allowed to drive. It's true. you know, from the outside, when people see these sort of like bits and pieces, it's just out of context. It's a lot of this is just sort of taken out of context, I think.
Right. So first of all, I think you made an excellent point. Differentiating between what are the core values and principles in the Torah and the basic halacha, and then what are certain customs that certain communities have elected for their own reasons to, as you said, women not to drive. Now, even in the yeshivish world and the Hasidic world, many of the women do drive. So I'm saying
many do, yeah.
So I'm just saying, and certainly the modern Orthodox world that doesn't apply at all. But I'm just saying that. But let's be honest. You know, the outside world who has, you know, very little familiarity with Judaism in general and Orthodoxy in specific, you know, let's be honest, look at us as being weird. let's just get to the uncomfortable point here. And the reason why Netflix picked it as being a, why their algorithm said this will be an outstanding thing. Well, first of all, just to break it down, it's an amazing rags to riches story. Here is a woman who had no education, for whatever reason, fled from her community, and then, you know, just started her own boutique shoe company. It got picked up by La Perla, a large international fashion corporation. And then ultimately, she's asked to be head of this fantastically successful modeling agency. And she happens to, in the thing, you know, fall in love and marry the billionaire, you know, Italian owner. So, you know, so if that's not Hollywood for you, I don't know what is. And then she welcomes everybody into the home to see that she's got, you know, some kids who are observant. Some kids very observant, some kids not observant at all, and it makes for what they call good reality TV. Now, just for those who are not so familiar with reality TV, nothing about reality TV in a certain sense is real. Everything is scripted. You can't, they're not walking around with a camera hoping somebody's going to say something good. You know, just in case you didn't know that, it's scripted, you know, not every word perhaps, but, you know, they have a schedule, they got to get it done, they have an arc of the story. And they figure out what the issues. So that's why if you watch the thing, it seems a little bit stilted, a little contrived. But I'm not here to give it a Rotten Tomato score. That's not my goal for tonight. My goal is to talk to you about some of the ideas. But I think in general that this is also coming after Netflix, Unorthodox, where women fled from being a summer cluster. And other, you know, the whole genre of books, of people who go, what is called the off the derech book genre, where people who were, you know, growing up in the most insular communities or less insular communities and writes about their tales. And it is something that, you know, as a product, America has picked up on. So I'm going to ask you more, like the most basic question I want to get your feedback on. If Orthodox Judaism was a corporation, and the customer satisfaction rating was as low as Julia and the general community seem to be assessing, what should be the proper response?
The number of Orthodox Jews should be declining and nobody would be joining as a Kiruv movement more and more people would be leaving. So I think the issue with the show is that it is so much blown out of proportion and put into Hollywood and used as symbols instead of the actual day-to-day life. So reality TV is a profit. It's what sells, right? So I think that, you know, there are some issues within every religion and every group of people. So therefore, I'm never going to get off my soapbox, but therefore the main thesis statement for this argument is that of course, some of the things that she's saying are issues, but they're issues across the board in so many communities. So it actually feels so targeted. Even my sister, who's getting married, God willing, on Sunday, was maybe going to join this call. She's going to watch the recording tomorrow. She said that she's not observant. Like, she's traditional. And she was like, this offends me. You have to watch it. I wasn't going to even watch it. And I was like, but you're not even Orthodox. So why does it offend you? So I think the main thing is it's offensive because it's so blown out of proportion. Okay. And we identify as Jews, and therefore we don't want to be put into this light.
Okay, so true. So look, I agree with that. You know, first of all, people have the criticism that it's not factually even her life. And of course, the goal of a reality TV show is to make it as salacious as possible, and as provocative as possible, which, shall we say, chick-ding, they were successful in that, and all that. But I want to say, but on the other hand, it's easy to say, oh, this is all Hollywood. There are really no issues. Everything is green as grass here in the Orthodox Jewish community. I don't know what's going on. She's crazy, and everything is fine. But the bottom line is that now what, going back to Amanda's point, now what level of a problem it is, that we can debate. But I still think, I'm not only talking about the PR issue, because more people are going to be, this is how hundreds of thousands of people, maybe millions of people, are going to be introduced to Orthodox Judaism via this show. Because if you're in Wichita, Kansas, or in Des Moines, Iowa, or in Colorado Springs, Colorado, this might be your only experience with Orthodox Jews, and you're going to watch it in this kind of thing. So obviously not the best PR movie that the Orthodox community has ever received, shall we say. But on the other hand, I think it's important for us to not to ignore some of her criticism and sort of like address some of the issues. So one of the things that bothered me was that, say what you want to say, but it was not even handed. There was like nobody, there was no pushback from anybody else. Like everybody, Julie got to say what she did, and there's nobody there, the part of the family or the extended family, shall we say, providing a thoughtful response. So I want to respond to some of the issues, because I think they're important issues. I think we're going to get to some of the scenarios where you might get these issues in your own life. But in order to do that, I want to get to the this week's Parsha, just a little piece here, which actually gets to our issue at hand here. So I want to, let me do a share screen here. We'll get to the Chumash here. Let's get to this. Okay. Alan Levakasha, can you read us the Pesukim? This is in the Parsha of Vayeschanan. And this is Moshe's address. He's gonna pass away in 5 weeks. And this is part of his grand goodbye, which is the Book of Devarim. And go ahead, 4:1.
Now, Israel, listen to the Shachim,
Chukim,
and the Mishpatim, laws of justice that I am teaching you to do, so that you will remain alive and come to occupy the land that God, the Lord of your fathers, is giving to you. See, I have taught you, what was that, Chukim?
Chukim.
Chukim and Mishpatim, as God, my Lord, has commanded me, so that you will be able to keep them in the land to which you are coming and which you will be occupying. Safeguard and keep these laws, since this is your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nations. They will hear all these Chukim and say, this is a great nation, is certainly a wise and understanding people.
Okay, so all right, so pause right there. So Moshe Rabbeinu has made the litmus test of the Jewish people being successful is that there are two categories of laws. Law one is called Chukim, laws whose rationale is not obvious. Think Kashrut, think Chatanes, think the laws of the purity laws, things whose rationale is not readily apparent. And Mishpatim are civil law. Don't murder, don't steal. Those are obvious and self-evidentiary, you know, laws which whose meaning is self-evident. So Moshe Rabbeinu, which Alan just read, says the measurement is that safeguard keeps lost in things of your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the nation. They will hear all the chukim, not the unexplained ones, and will say, this great nation is certainly a wise and understanding people. So already the very fact that, shall we say, we have produced on Netflix the my Unorthodox Life, shall we say, is that we've not exactly hit the Moshe Rabbeinu threshold of Jewish people's successhood over here, because I don't think everybody's saying, collectively, fully, that we are a wise and understanding people. Okay, let's keep on going. Moshe Rabbeinu goes on.
What nation is so great that they have God close to it? As God our Lord is, whenever we call him, what nation is so great that they have such a righteous Chukim and Mishpatim like this entire Torah that I'm presenting before you today? Only take heed and watch yourself very carefully so that you do not forget the things that your eyes saw. Do not let this memory leave your hearts and all the days of your lives. Teach your children and your children's children about the day you stood before God, your Lord, at Horeb.
Horeb is another synonym for Sinai. Okay. All right. So on the surface, there's an obvious question here, is that right now, or for many years, the Jews have been keeping Chukim Mishpatim, or percentage of them, and we're not necessarily always called a wise and understanding people. So in order to get a context, we need to check out a little Rashi. So let me call who would like to volunteer to read next. All right, Amanda, go ahead, do it.
Okay, so safeguard. This refers to the study of laws. And keep this must be explained according to what it implies, and you should observe these laws.
All right, so pause right there. So the Rashi is dealing with a repetition. Ushmartim vasisim, you should guard and you should do. So what does guarding mean other than doing? So the oral law says guarding, safeguarding refers to study them. So it's not just the mechanical performance of them, but studying the mitzvot. Keep on going.
Okay, so for this your wisdom and understanding in the eyes of the people, through this you will be accounted and wise and understanding men in the eyes of the people. Okay. So should I say what he's saying, basically?
No, so he's saying he's clarifying through this proper observance of the mitzvos, you'll be accounted as wise and understanding. Let's finish off what he has to say.
So who came in righteous, mashpatim, proper and acceptable ones. So he's basically saying like that everyone has the responsibility to be righteous, right? And mashpatim is like justice, right, for the law.
So he's talking about chukim umishpatim tzadikim. The word tzadikim is referring is an adjective qualifying the chukim mishpatim, that they are intrinsically the laws, the body of the 613 laws, are acceptable and proper. Now, this is the key Rashi here. This one right over here. Take it away.
Yeah, the next one. We use it sometimes in school with kids. Only take heed and watch yourself very carefully, but only then, when you do not forget them, but will do them in their true manner, will you be accounted wise and understanding men. But if you do them in a distorted manner through forgetfulness, you will be accounted foolish.
Okay, so apparently the Rashi is presenting that you could have two people doing the exact same mitzvah in action, doing it identically. One will be called foolish and the other will be called wise. What is the differentia between person A and person B? There's one ingredient that's going to make the difference.
Intention?
Nope.
No, it's. I think that it's actually your ability to judge yourself versus judging others. Like it says, watch yourself very carefully. Like be careful, and in what you're doing.
Well, but what do you have to watch yourself about? What is? There's a key element here, which is the secret sauce of Judaism.
It's how you conduct yourself, right?
Like what's going to be able to conduct yourself properly, wisely versus improperly, foolishly? There's one ingredient here. And he referenced it in the beginning. And my hint is it's from the very first Rashi.
Well, I guess it's this understanding that it all comes from Hashem, right? And it's
nobody does mitzvahs and say, well, I'm doing, everybody knows these are the mitzvahs from God. They know they're doing, in a sense, God's will. So they're aware of that, but that's still not the secret sauce. That's not the secret sauce.
Isn't he saying that you observe and keep both chukim and mishpatim?
Yes. Both? So obviously means that we're talking about you're not just, you know, picking from the menu, but you're doing them both. But what makes them, there's a proper observance of them both, and there is a distorted or foolish one that you'll be viewed as being foolish. The key element here is the study of the laws. You need to, in other words, you not only not simply to know what to do, but why you're doing it.
And where it comes from, though, Rabbi Penny, too. I feel like that was something that I learned through MJE. Like a lot of times when I was in college at Brandeis, I was just doing it rote. Like I had no idea. Like, you know,
I understand that. And that, by the way, and you should know, that's an appropriate stage. There's no way to skip that stage. But what I'm sharing with you is you cannot compare when I'm doing a mitzvah in a rote behavior, which I don't really know what I'm doing, versus I study the mitzvah. I learn about the various messages, benefits, and ideas that the mitzvah is trying to bring out, the therapeutic benefit of the mitzvah, the redemptive benefit of the mitzvah versus just doing a mechanical action. Okay. I don't want to when you're, as a person's growing in their Judaism, you can't possibly, it's impossible to know all the ideas of all the 613 mitzvahs that's really a lifetime quest, but I'm just saying, that's the difference. Now, I want to bring that out by giving some scenarios. Like, because I'm really asking is why, to put it back to the Netflix show here for a moment, why doesn't Julia find the laws of the Torah a feature of a wise, understanding people? That's why she checked out. She has married a non-Jew. She eats not kosher, and she's actively trying to deprogram her children of being observant. So obviously she's not thinking this is a good deal. This is not a good deal. So I want to get to the issue here is that I'm going to give you scenarios which will bring out the situation, because the way that you might experience this might happen to you. So I'm going to give you scenario number one. Here we go. Nancy MJEer has become fully observant over many years. The toughest mitzvah was applying the principles of modesty to dress. Jane, her work friend, invites her to a pool party next Sunday. Nancy says that she'll stop over for a time for a drink, but she will not be wearing a bathing suit. Jane, looking at her skirt, asks her, "Are you part of the community that Julia Hart from My Unorthodox Life is always talking about? Why do you want men deciding what you should wear?" So imagine you're Nancy. What are you telling her?
I'm not going to mansplain to the women on this Zoom call.
Alan is using the benefit.
I'm not taking this question.
I'll take it if no one else will. I just feel like I'm tired of hearing.
Yeah, man, you take the questions.
So I think that the issue there is right. Like, is that this colleague is generalizing, right? So I'd be like, So I would say something along the lines of, I wouldn't even make it about swimming and about the pool or anything of that sort. I would just turn it back and be like, I'm really excited to have like a good time with you. I'm, you know, there's all different sects of Judaism and I don't identify with that particular sect. And in addition, you know, each community has their own values and it's really hard to learn those values through reality TV. So why don't you come for Shabbat lunch and see what it's like? Like,
okay. Okay. So you're not, because you recognize you cannot teach her. You're being challenged by when the convert candidate comes to Hillel and says, explain the entire Torah while standing on one foot. So you're being told, challenged to explain the Torah in you know, one foot. So I will share with you what I would say. Obviously, I'm prepared, so I got the chance to write the question, so I get the chance to craft the answer. So you know, I'm not sure I would be able to say this on the spot, but I would say I would have something to the effect that I would say, no man or woman decides what I wear. I embrace Judaism's idea of modesty, which is for both men and women. And Dr. Martin Luther King summed it out well when he said, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they'll not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. We brand ourselves as people of character, people of kindness, and people of insight. The modest dress removes the distraction of my sexuality from my core brand. Modesty means that both men and women do not show off any assets except their true self. My sexuality is for me and my spouse only. And I have a dream that people will not be judged by the exposure of their skin, but by their content of their character. I mean, I wouldn't say it in a speechy kind of way like that, but that would be my, in essence, what I would say. But the point is to, first of all, just to deconstruct, she's saying the way that Julia, you know, puts it in the thing that men are telling her to be what to wear. No man's telling anybody what to wear. Now, there she could say, well, she's looking at, you know, the rabbis telling them to, their community has to wear a certain level of dress. So she views it as being a feminist oppression. But a Jewish man or woman observes the laws of modesty, and there's equally to, it's essentially, it's about not showing off. It's about being having a certain brand for not just for the others, but for myself. How do I self-identify? What is my life about? My life is about character, kindness, insight, and community. And I want to be taken seriously. And by dressing a certain way and not being showing off, whether with any of, you know, in my house, in my car, in my dress, in all areas, and being a person of substance, that is what the Jewish idea of modesty is about. And, you know, I wouldn't, that might, you know, depending on the tone of the conversation, I'm not going to would say it in that kind of way. I would do it in a much more easy breezy kind of way. But I'm just saying that's the essence of the issue. It's not about women being oppressed by being forced to wear, clothing that completely, blurs their identity or erases their identity. Rather, is what is your identity? Judaism wants a person to be a person whose essential internal and external persona, their brand, is to be about character, substance, ideas, kindness, compassion, supporting others. And by dressing in a provocative way, that undermines that, both for themselves. What is my essence? I'm trying to get attention or trying to show off, versus trying to be essentially a person who is a caring, compassionate person. And the point is, you could also, you know, that would be something to that would be my general motif in addressing that issue. Jessica, your hand is up. How are you? It is good to have you. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
Sorry I was late. Good to see and hear from everyone today. I just wanted to add something to what you said. You mentioned that it's men and women. And I know that at least when I was learning or when I was growing up as a traditional Jew, not Orthodox in any way, it was always thought of as the women dressed this way, the women, the women, the women. And it wasn't until I met Yoav, my husband, that I realized that men are the same. He is totally modest. He won't even wear t-shirts because he says, no, it's not. Why are the women the only one wearing it? We're all supposed to be modest. And like the very, very, very few times that he and I have gone to some sort of like pool thing, which is like secluded and not, you know, he's even wearing like the long pants underneath it. Like, he's totally covered. And I never, ever thought about that. And that's a good point, because people always say, oh, the women are the ones that are like this, the women. But it's supposed to go both ways. And I appreciated that you said men and women.
Yeah, I want to. So Jessica, excellent point, and Yashikov for sharing that. Like, the modesty that guys have to show. Well, first of all, it'd be wrong for a guy to, take off his shirt and go into shul, or, just take off his shirt in general. I'm not saying a guy can't be in a swimsuit in a pool. There are some halachic details here, but we're talking about the broad thing. A man's challenge is to show one thing that came very clear about this reality TV show is basically it's a showing off of, look at my tremendous financial success. Look at my, $30 million penthouse apartment in Chelsea. Look at my billions of dollars worth of clothing. That is also not sneeze. It's not about showing a collarbone. It's about being discreet and not distracting people with all your financial success. That's also a lack. Person should be what they call the term comes from the prophet Micha. It says Hatsneya lecha im Hashem, et Hashem, to walk humbly with God. Doesn't say man, doesn't say woman. Interesting, the examples, we've done those in other parsha classes, which is that one example of tzniut is helping out a poor bride to have money for her wedding and not letting other people know that you were supporting. In other words, to do it modestly, to do your mitzvahs modestly, not to be grandstanding. In other words, basically avoiding the spotlight. One way of spotlight, if a guy has six-pack abs, is to walk around. Whenever they have an opportunity, take off your shirt and show everybody that you have a tremendous body. Okay, that would be wrong for a guy to do that. But also to show off in other ways, so that you are, the goal is to be not a publicity hound and not to seek attention for no purpose other than just getting in just inflaming your ego. That's really the brand that Judaism wants to have both male and female people, men and women both participating in. The topic of tzniut is vast, but somebody else had a question? Yes, Alan.
No, in the series, there are a lot of like sexual conversations, and like even in a non-Jewish, like secular world, like Julia talks about her kids when they got married, like nobody talks like that. So again, like it's attention, right. And like the daughter is like making out with multiple different people on camera. Like the real world doesn't operate like that.
Well, so my favorite scene is when in Muncie, she like goes in, like she on purpose wears the outfit that will bring her the most attention when she goes.
Right. In the red Bentley.
Right. But also even like the non-Jewish friend who's with her is like kind of like taken back by how revealing she's decided to be while going to Muncie, like on purpose.
Right. So look, again, obviously she's going through since she views that wearing sneas is oppression. So therefore the most that she could be more revealing and the more sexual nor sort of reaction formation, then she goes the other extreme. So obviously, it's Alan's right. People are not, being so overtly sexual, and even in a regular secular, I'm sure in an atheist family, mom and dad are not talking about their intimate sexual behavior to their kids because that's just, basic parenting 101. That's not helpful to anybody. Not every information is helpful for every person at every time.
So well, that's how you know there's something psychologically wrong.
Correct. But okay. I'm more concerned about the issues that she brings up, which the issues of tzniut is an issue that people have. And I wanted to address that. I'm going to go to Artem and Marissa, and then we'll go to Katie.
Thanks. So can you guys hear me? I'm kind of far from the camera.
Okay. Perfect. Good sound.
Okay, great. So over the years, one of the sort of concepts or one of the ways that I've learned that talking about tzniut works for me is to make it about, and what you guys were just talking about reminded me of that, to make it about dignity and wanting to look like a look dignified and feel dignified. So for me, like, I don't, you know, I don't really love the direct translation of tzniut or tzniut as like modesty, because it is, I think it's more than that. I think modesty is part of it, but I think also dignity and being just like a dignified person, like a dignified person. It is not dignified to, you know, get on camera and just like start like making out with lots of people, regardless of whether or not it's modest by whatever, you know, standards people have. Like, it's just not really a classy thing to do. You know, talking about your sex life, like, to your kids, that's like, you know, pasnish. Like, it's not becoming of one, it's not becoming of you. Like, you know, so I think that when it comes to especially girls and women and like hypersexualization of young girls by telling them that like you don't wear tights, you're turning on guys, you know, like, I have a lot of strong feelings about that. And if I have daughters one day, I plan to educate them about you know, being a tsunua person as being like a dignified, like, classy person, not yeah. So and less emphasis on like, oh, you have to, you know, guard your body. I mean, yes, that's important too. Or these muscles about like, oh, your body's a diamond, and, you know, all these things that they teach girls and in the schools. I get it. But it's more about just like feeling, you know, feeling good and dignified about yourself. So I want to say that.
I want to underscore one thing you bring up. So people fail to realize that tzniut is not for the public, essentially. It's for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's about you feeling personally dignified, and what you wear and how you present yourself is an expression of how you feel. So that's, it's not about what's going to happen to the guy. Okay. So much. Okay. So that's the, all right. We have so many people. All right, got a lot of hands up. I'm going to go to Katie. Then I'm going to go to, okay, go ahead.
So, I mean, I think for me, the way I dress is something that I have struggled with the most in my journey to being more observant.
Yep.
Because I think, and, you know, you asked at the beginning, are there any things that she's saying that you agree with? And some of the stuff I relate to and I struggle with, and it's like, just like, men should be able to control themselves and control their thoughts. And like, if I wear a sleeveless dress when it's 95 degrees out, like, that, like, if they can't control, like, I don't really care if they can't control their thoughts.
Okay. That's an excellent point. So I want to speak to that just briefly. SNEAS is, as we mentioned, it's two parts. It's for men and women, A, and being for not being provocative, A, and B, two, it's essentially for the person themselves, as being what is my essence, if you will, what is my personal dignity, as Marissa said, what is the quality of character that I want to present. Obviously, a person. Now, having said that, the reason that women have an additional, let's call it additional obligation, is to keep the natural sexualization of the community lower. In other words, in America, I walk down the street in Manhattan, we're going to go to Manhattan tomorrow, I'm going to work, and it's going to be a hot day, and there are women who are wearing just basically lingerie. You just, you know, just, it's just like, what the, it's like ridiculous, really. So, It's you know, and it, shall we say, it's very distracting. So it's not helping the society focus on the higher goals of life if everything becomes so hypersexualized. Now, how halacha distinguishes that, what exactly is the line, that's a whole conversation. But I'm just saying that there is a broader social mandate. It's not about what guys, individual guys, it's about, you want to have a society of substance, of kindness, compassion, and insight, and care for people. You want to turn the libidinous energy lower, the instinctuality lower. In America, it's the opposite. It's just like at a roar. I mean, it's like, you know, and, you know, Europe is even more than that. So it's just, it's not helpful. It's not helpful, is a better way. It's not that we have a sexual taboo. It's just that it's not productive toward the mission of the Jewish people and society in general. Okay, Sean, and then Marvin, then we got to go on because I want to get to two other topics because I only got limited time. Okay, Sean, quick, you got it.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, like, how should we, like, reconcile her, like, total rejection of, like, Torah Judaism and her, like, rags to riches story
since essentially she's become like very successful after essentially like rejecting like Judaism, including even getting more money from having this like TV show. So it seems like I know like in Judaism, like we don't, just because we like keep halakha, we don't get like cause and effect. Well, if we become observant, we'll become wealthy and be successful and the opposite.
Judaism is not a gumball machine. You do the mitzvah, out comes the gumball. It's not an ATM. You do the mitzvah, out comes $100 bill. The bottom line is that, you know, that gets into a larger question, which is a class-worthy topic, which is basically what is success? And, you know, if you just pick up a People magazine or an Us magazine, people who have all the fame and all the fortune are unfortunately some of the most miserable, unhappy people. It's not about having lots of stuff. It's about being happy. So those things are not correlated. So I'm giving you a short answer to that. That's worthy of a class. Okay. Marvin, last point question, because I got to go to our two more topics. I want to get it in.
You actually just kind of made the point that some of these people end up very unhappy in the end. They think they're going to get something that they're missing, and then they always try for more. And before you know it, there's either drugs or alcohol. I've been in that world with a colleague of mine who was very much in recovery for a number of years and worked with others who were going through recovery. And these are people who are always trying to find their happiness, and they do usually don't find it. This may be an exception. They may all wind up happy. My guess is over time, they're going to have problems within that family that are not insignificant.
Fair point. I think you're onto something. Okay. Scenario number two. I got three scenarios. We're up to number two. Barry, MG, your old college buddies. Good old college buddy, Jim, calls them to get together for lunch on Sunday. He says he would love to, but Barry has to go to a kosher restaurant. So Joe asks them, are you like the religious kid Aaron in my unorthodox life? When did you turn into a fundamentalist Jew with all their food taboos? What would you respond? We're talking about a scenario. You know, Joe and the boys would go with Barry out to get wings at the bar, have some beer. You know, the good old days in college. What happened to Barry? Now he's all koshering on him? How should Barry respond to Joe? He wants to go out for non-kosher wings.
Clearly, Joe is not such a good friend, right? Because there's so many dietary things that people have these days, whether it's being vegan, gluten-free, all this kind of stuff. So kosher is just one more of those things. So first, I would like reconsider my friendship with Joe. So that would be the first thing. Maybe we outgrew each other. People outgrow each other. That's fine. But he was really my, like, ride or die friend, I'd be like, listen, Joe, like, that's a stereotype that you saw. These are the dietary laws that I am, like, I'll sit with you if you want and I'll drink water, but like, I'm not, like, this is what I hold by. And like, here's the door. Like, that's really what I would.
Like, okay.
I've had deal with this a few times. Going from someone who didn't always keep kosher to now fully keeps kosher, especially friends that I used to go out with all the time. I just tell them, like, I just decided to become more observant. And I find, honestly, that the non-Jews are more respectful than the Jews themselves that are not religious.
Correct.
often I pick a place that I know, you know, not all kosher restaurants are the best quality, let's say. But I try to pick a place that I think that they would enjoy anyway. And so that wouldn't be as like, oh, the kosher foodie is so bad or the service is so bad. And that's what I tend to do.
Okay. All right. So, Scott, you had your hand up, Scott.
I was going to try and piggyback off of like what Amanda said, just saying like, you know, you're not the same person that you were in college. Like, you've grown, you've changed. It's just, you know, you're still the same person. You just don't eat the same food. Or okay. You do, but you know what I mean.
So this is how I would address it. If Joe was pressing me on this, because we used to have a lot of times having beer and wings back in the day, or maybe not that long ago, maybe even last year. They know that's also a possibility. I'm not talking about, you know, especially that's what, you know, there's going to be a time where the person becomes more observant. They're going to have the new reality has to be shared. So I would share something like this. I'd say, Joe, Judaism is about continuous improvement. 1% a day, every day. Eating is essential for life. Therefore, a critical part of Judaism is the laws of kosher. And one idea of the type of mindful eating is our relationship to eating live animals. 90% of kosher laws is about meat, how we take an animal's life and eat it in a sacred manner can be transformational. And the second idea is it's about eating to live and not living to eat. And this is just a conversation we can continue on when we eat at the kosher restaurant. So these are, that's, I would bring up these types of issues that if they really want to know why, if they want the standing on one foot answer, I would give them something like that. Last question. Very common to all MGers. Renee MGer was chatting with her mother on the phone. Suddenly her mother burst out, "I'm so worried about your new Orthodox lifestyle. Every time I see Julia Hart on TV, I think you and the great life that you're throwing away. Why do you have to become a second-class citizen in a cult?" What do you tell mom? Katie, yeah, you're on.
Not literally my mom said this, but my mom has had conversations like this about me in terms of, you know, she sees Orthodox Judaism as like the anti-feminism, and my mom is very much a feminist. What I basically say to her is like, I'm still the same person that you raised. Like, do you think I would willingly do something where I felt that women were oppressed in any way? And like, you know, you raised me the way you raised me, and I still value those things and believe in those things. And there are wonderful things within Judaism that kind of agree with the way that I was raised, basically.
Very nice. That's an excellent response. I would respond, mom, what cult are you referring to? You know that the Prime Minister of Israel, Naftali Bennett, is an Orthodox Jew. I believe that's in fact the future of Judaism and not a cult. I would share that fact. Who else wants to talk? All right, Jessica.
I was also going to say that if you are happier now as a person following these things, I think that's important to add that, like, you know, I'm a lot calmer, or I'm a lot happier, and, you know, like, I have more peace. I'm at more peace with myself now that I'm more spiritual. And just kind of, because what do parents ultimately want, right? Parents want their children to be happy. And that's, if that's what's making you happier, I would just add something like that to it.
Right. So that, by the way, is, I would say, mom, I'm not in a cult. You know, I'm in the oldest religion of the world, and by being more observant, I have a better quality of life. I'm happier. That's an excellent response. So I want to.
I would open it up to be like, why do you think that it's a cult? Like, give me some examples, because I feel like, you know, it can't, like, you know what I mean? Like, you go from like going to Bloomingdale's with your mom Saturday afternoon to be like, I'm not picking up my cell phone. And you know what I mean? Like, there's just a lot of, you have to explain it slowly and actually hear them
Correct.
You don't have to like fall to it, you know what I mean? And be like, now I'm going to come out with you. But you have to, I feel like you have to hear them out in that situation.
Correct. I'm just sharing with you that I'm sharing. So, Amanda, you're only 100% correct. These are not one, many times these are not one conversation, but oftentimes you will get challenged abruptly. But what I'm sharing with you is that what I wanted to take out of the goal here is not for you, you know, the goal is I want to take something positive from the Netflix series, because I think there's something positive to take from that, which is that what Julia Hart inadvertently has done, I think she has challenged the Jewish community at large and every individual to get 1% better every day in your understanding of Judaism, not just to be content with what to do, but why we do it. you know, in fact, we're going to, as we go throughout the summer, do the various books, the Parshiot of Devarim together every Tuesday night. You're welcome to join everyone. Is that Moshe talks about the big ideas of Judaism while weaving in the individual mitzvot and laws. And if we live in a Jewish community who is committed to the why of Judaism as much as the how and what of Judaism, we will move together, we'll move a little closer to a Moshe Rabbeinu's high bar of being the great nation, which is certainly a wise and understanding people. But I want to close, got 5 minutes left, with a little clip, which always impressed me, of Prince Charles of Wales, who shared 4 minutes, sort of a testimony after Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks passed away. And he shared his experience of being a close friend of Rabbi Sacks. And I think in that, I believe that's, we can't all be Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, genius, amazing person. But you listen carefully to what Prince Charles says. I think there's a tremendous lesson. So we're going to go to the videotape. We're going to do the unusual closing video. Here we go. Do the share screen. Here we go.
As we gather to commemorate the life of Rabbi Lord Sacks, I just wanted to add my own personal tribute. His sudden and unexpected death is an irreplaceable loss to the Jewish community, to this nation, and to the world, but most of all to his family, to whom he was utterly devoted. Our thoughts and prayers are with them at this saddest of times. Through his writings, sermons, and broadcasts, Rabbi Sacks touched the lives of countless people with his unfailing wisdom, with his profound sanity, and with a moral conviction, which, in a confused and confusing world, was all too rare. He and I were exact contemporaries, born in the year of the foundation of the State of Israel, and over many years I had come to value his counsel immensely. He was a trusted guide, an inspired teacher, and a true and steadfast friend. I shall miss him more than words can say. With his incomparable store of learning and with his innate sense of the power of the story, he defined the moral challenges and the choices our society faces, speaking with conviction across the boundaries of the sacred and the secular, across the generations, and across all barriers of culture and religion. He taught us how to listen to others and how to learn from them without compromising the convictions of either party. He taught us to value participation in the common life of the nation. And through it all, he taught us the need to respect the integrity and harmony of God's creation. In 2013, at the event to mark Rabbi Sacks' retirement as chief rabbi after 22 distinguished years, I said, deliberately misquoting Isaiah, that he was a light unto this nation, and said I hoped he would keep that light burning for many years to come. That was only 7 years ago, but in the years that he was given to us, how brightly that light burned, how many lives were brightened, how many dark places were illuminated. He was truly, Or LaGoyim, a light unto the nations. In contemplating this tragic and devastating loss, all we can do is to have faith in the divine providence in which Rabbi Sacks himself placed his trust. As the psalmist says, our times are in his hands. Though Rabbi Sacks' time with us seemed all too short, his 72 years left the world transformed by his presence. In his sermons, his broadcasts, and his books, he spoke with urgency, rich with learning, rooted in humility, charged with passion. His was unmistakably a voice in the tradition of the greatest teachers among the Jewish people. We mourn his passing, but we thank God that he was given to us for these 72 years, and that in that time, he renewed our vision of a society where all are valued, where all share a moral bond and a divine purpose. We honor his memory by committing ourselves to that vision. When his own revered teacher, Rav Nachum Rabinovich, passed away earlier this year, Rabbi Sacks paid tribute and said, "Teachers give us more than knowledge. They give us life. Having a great teacher is as close as we get to heaven." Those words could rightly be said of Rabbi Sacks. Yehi zichro baruch. May his memory be for a blessing.
So what's amazing about that presentation was that here we have the Prince of Wales, a highly educated world leader, who appreciated Rabbi Sacks as being a source of wisdom, not just to the Jewish community, but to the entire British Empire and to the world. Now, what he sees, so he's seeing that Judaism can be a light unto the nation, and each person has an obligation to do that, each person on their own level. And what I'm sharing with tonight is the goal of getting 1% better per day, a little bit, not just knowing the what of Judaism, but exploring the why of Judaism, what we do. We have a great tradition, great ideas, great values, which can make a person to have a rich and fulfilling life. But it takes work. It's not something that's immediate, like watching a Netflix video. So that's the mandate. I think each person at their own level, at their own speed, but much can be done. And I think much needs to be done. And I think that the opportunity that this Netflix special brought is to discuss issues that are not often discussed, address them in a thoughtful way, or at least begin the conversation, and to have a personal mandate to really, shall we say in Yiddish, up our game. And each person on their own level, and for your own, forget about everybody else, but for your own sake, for your own satisfaction, for your own richness of the quality of your life, but as well as for the benefit of the Jewish people that we are presented as being thoughtful, reflective, caring people who are, as Prince Charles says, are a light onto the nations. Okay. I wish everybody a Lala Tov. Good night. And see you guys. If you guys come every Tuesday night, same time, same link. All the best.
Thanks.